Can somebody pass me a book? One.
It will be possible to finish by two, because you know, we'll be going up, after we go here, the guy there is no, that's good, because we're going to...
Oh, yes. Yeah, sure. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Narayanam Namaskritta.
Narayanam Namaskritam.
Narancheva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Tato Jaya Mudirayate.
Tato Jaya Mudirayate.
So, we are revising the first, second and third shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter. The first three shlokas are actually Srimad Bhagavatam. So yesterday we discussed about the first shloka and today we'll discuss about the second. These three are very important shlokas. So second shloka you can say is the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharma prachita koitavo atra paramo nirmat saranam satam Vedam Bhastava Matra Vastu Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite King Ba Parvijishara Saddo Riddha Varuddha Teatro Kriti Bhi Shushushu Bhi Stathana. It's a very important shloka as I mentioned earlier. So everybody should try to memorize this shloka. Translation, completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Puran propounds the highest truth which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. So, literally, it means that when one becomes free from all material desires, then only his heart becomes purified. His heart becomes free from contamination. And the grossest form of that contamination is envy. So, when one becomes detached, or when one gives up all the desire for material enjoyment, then only one becomes free from envy, and then only his heart becomes completely purified. And then only he becomes eligible to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless and until our heart is purified, we cannot possibly get to know Krishna or get to understand Krishna. We may practice, we may chant the holy name or we may render devotional service in practice, but we won't develop genuine Krishna consciousness or love, genuine love for Krishna. And through that genuine love for Krishna alone can one understand Krishna. And that's what has been explained here. Vedam Bastava Matra Vastu, gets to realize or gets to recognize the reality, real reality. And that is Shivadam. The word Shivadam means giver of peace and tranquility. This awareness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives us the peace of mind. The real peace of mind is attained only by Krishna consciousness. And that is tapotrayam unmulanam. That uproots the threefold miseries. There are threefold miseries. Those miseries are adhi atmik, adhi doibik, and adhi bhautik. Adhi atmik misery is the miseries caused by our body and mind. Miseries caused by other living entities are called adhi bhautik, and miseries caused by the different controllers of the material nature, the demigods, are called the adhi doibik. So these are the threefold miseries, and every living entity is actually suffering this threefold misery. Old or young, rich or poor, everyone is suffering from these threefold miseries. So that is the very basic state of material nature. Whoever is here is bound to suffer this threefold miseries. But when one gets to know Krishna, then these threefold miseries are totally uprooted. Tapotraya unmulanam. Unmulanam means uprooted. Then these miseries become ineffective. When one becomes a devotee of Krishna, when one begins to render devotional service unto Krishna, when one becomes aware of Krishna as the Supreme Absolute Truth, then these threefold miseries are mitigated. But what is the basic criterion, basic requirement for that? Basic requirement for coming to this platform of recognizing Krishna, understanding Krishna, and becoming free from all kinds of material miseries is dharma prachita koitavo. One must give up the koitavo dharma. Koitavo dharma means cheating religion, false religion. The religion that apparently appears, some activities that apparently appears to be like religion, religious activities, but actually they are not. So that has been described here as koitavo dharma, cheating religion. And what are those cheating religions? So-called religious activities that are actually motivated by sense gratification. When you do something, apparently it appears to be like religion, but we want our sense gratification out of those activities. They are actually the activities prescribed in Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda section of the Vedas. Karma Kanda section of the Vedas describe how to act to fulfill our material desires. Different living entities have different desires. Some people want to be rich, some people want to be wise, some people want to have a beautiful wife, powerful, and so on and so forth. So this is, and the Karma Kanda actually gives us the prescription how to fulfill those material desires. And that is known as the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. Karma section of the Vedas, there is another section which is known as Jnana Kanda, or knowledge section. And the ultimate consideration of this Jnana Kanda is liberation. And it has been pointed out that liberation also is a kind of sense gratification. Desire for liberation is also a kind of sense gratification. Either we want to cater to the demands of the senses, or we want to be completely free from the demands of the senses. Now both are actually pertaining to the senses, and that's why both are sense gratification. To enjoy with our senses, and then by realizing that by means of our senses we are simply receiving pain and suffering, then to be free from this suffering by means of liberation is also a kind of sense gratification. And actually it has been described that this is higher form of, or more intense form of sense gratification, not higher, but more acute sense gratification. Liberation is actually even more acute sense gratification. Why? Because through this process of liberation, one wants to become one with God. One wants to become God. This liberation is known as what? What kind of liberation is this? Who knows? Sajityam. How many types of liberations are there? Five. What are they? What are those? One you have said, Sajidya. Anybody else? Sharupa, second. Then? Shalakya. Then? Samyupa. And then? The fifth one? Shashya. So there are five kinds of liberation.
First one is then Samyukta, Samyukta. And then the fifth one, so these are different kinds of liberation. Now these four liberations are positive. But this one is negative. Why this Sajidya is considered to be negative? Right. They do not, this Sajidya Mukti, in this Sajidya Mukti there is no awareness of God. No. They want to become liberated, but in that liberation they do not have any awareness of Krishna. And why is that? That is because they lose their consciousness in that. They lose their consciousness in this liberation. They penetrate through the coverings of Maya. This material nature has eight coverings. And a person aspiring to be liberated this way by Sajidya Mukti, by means of their austerities and penances, they can penetrate through the coverings of Maya.
But then they come in contact with the Brahma Jyoti. And when they come in contact with the Brahma Jyoti, the glaring effulgence of the Brahma Jyoti, due to the glaring effulgence of the Brahma Jyoti, they lose their consciousness. It has been compared to somebody who has been in a dark room for a very, very long time. Like all of a sudden he is taken to the taken out and meant to look at the midday sun. What will happen to his eye? A man who has been in a dark room for years together, then all of a sudden you take him out and make him look at the sun, what happens? He becomes blind. Now this material nature is dark. This material nature is in eternal darkness. Everybody here are remaining in a region of darkness. But they, if they are all of a sudden taken to the spiritual effulgence, taken out of this material nature and made to look at the glaring effulgence of Brahma Jyoti, then immediately they actually become blinded. They lose all their consciousness. So that's what actually happens to these to Mayavadis. And this has been described in a shloka that Jayanna Aurobindaksha Bimukta Maninas Tajyasto Bhavad Abhishuddha Buddhayo Arujya Krichena Param Padam Tato Patanti Adha Anadhita Vishmadam. Now when somebody by means of austerities and penances elevate themselves to Param Pada, the spiritual nature, they fall down for Patanti Adha because they have disregarded the lotus feet of Krishna. So that is the condition of this Mayavadi. So that's why it has been considered that Sajujya Mukti is negative. Now more graphically we can describe it like this. Like this material nature is like a prison house. Now everyone in the material nature is imprisoned in this prison house. Now if somebody wants to get out of the prison house, he actually can get out by two different means. Either he can scale the walls of the prison house and run away, or dug a tunnel, or somehow or other run away from the prison. But this running away from the prison is not positive. It's actually negative. Although he is outside of the prison, although he managed to get out of the prison, but still he is not free. The police will be after him and he'll have to run, he'll have to hide in all kinds of strange places. And then, when the police catch him, then his sentence will be more severe. So this is a negative freedom, but there's a positive way of getting out of it. And what is that positive way? The positive way is that a person recognizes his defect. He realizes why he has been imprisoned. And he realizes that he disregarded the law of the king or the state. And then he appeals to the king that I made a mistake, I broke your law. Now I realize that I made a mistake and I give my word of honor, I take a vow that I'll never ever break your law, I'll just become a law-abiding citizen in your country. Then the king may release him. Then the king will say, okay, first the king may say, well, let us see whether he really means it. So the king informs the warden of the prison and ask him to watch this person, if there is any change in his nature. And then, if the report is good, then the person may be released from the prison. The king may send the order that now release him. His consciousness has been rectified. He has become submissive and law-abiding. So, the same way, we are in the material nature, which is like a prison house, and we all are prisoners. And the cause of our prison is that we broke the law of the King of Kings, Krishna. We disregarded Krishna's law, and that's why you have fallen into the material nature, the prison house of material nature. And in this prison house, like in any other prison, we are being punished constantly. The prisoners are put into prison to get punished in order to rectify their consciousness. Their consciousness has been perverted, their consciousness has become defective, and that's why they're being punished to straighten out or rectify their consciousness. Now, we are also in the same condition. We broke the law of Krishna, and that's why we have fallen in this material nature, and in this material nature, we all are suffering constantly. Now, when some intelligent person, or more than intelligent, when some fortunate person becomes aware of that fact, that he is actually suffering, then he tries to be rid of this suffering. He tries to become free from this suffering. And if he does not come in contact with a proper teacher or a bona fide guru, if he is misled by some misconception, then he may think that, well, I am in this material nature, and because of my being in the material nature, I am suffering. So by hook or by crook, somehow or other, let me get out of this material nature. And he tries to get out of this material nature by some unnatural means, like digging a tunnel through this prison, or scaling the wall, climbing the wall. It's very, very strenuous, very troublesome to run away from the prison like that. So the same way, to get out of this material nature that way is also very, very difficult. If somebody tries to get out of the material nature by penetrating through the coverings of Maya, it's very difficult. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the doibi hesha gunamoyi mamo maya durataya. It is impossible to surmount this Maya. And if somebody does it by chance or by dint of his own very, very severe hard endeavor, then what happens? Then he gets out of the material nature, and apparently he becomes liberated, but actually it is even worse than being in the material. He is, first of all, this situation is not permanent. To be situated in Brahma Jyoti is not a permanent situation. He is going to fall down again. And when he falls down, or when he is pulled back to this material nature, then his punishment is going to become even more severe, even more severe. So that's why this liberation, Shayujya Mukti, has been considered as a negative liberation. But other four are positive. They are, Shamipa means,
Shamipa?
Shamipa? Yeah. To be close to the Lord. Shamipa means to be close. So Shamipa liberation, by this liberation one comes in close, one gets a chance to associate with the Lord closely. Shaloka means? Very good. Shaloku means to be in the same planet with the Lord. And that means to be in Vaikuntha. All these liberations are actually Vaikuntha liberation. Sharupa means to have the same form as the Lord. And Shashti? Yeah, to have the opulence as the Lord Himself. Now these four are positive liberation. But the wonderful thing is that devotees don't want this liberation. Even this liberation, devotees don't want. Devotees don't want this liberation. Why?
Because there's no devotees.
No, there is devotees. When you are in Vaikuntha, with Vishnu, you are rendering service. Especially in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, devotees don't want this liberation.
Preaching?
Because devotees are already liberated. Say we can say the first one, devotees are already close to the Lord. Isn't it? They are in the temple, the Lord is there, they are very close to the Lord, they are offering service to the Lord. They are dependent upon the Lord. So that's why devotees don't really separately aspire for liberation. That's why devotees simply want devotional service. Beyond that, they don't want it. And regarding that, there is a very nice example. I hope all of you read Chaitanya Charitamrita. No? You don't have it in French? No? Anyway, so there's a story, there's an incident. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling to South India. After he took sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling through South India. And in South India, there's a place called Udipi. Udipi. And that is the place of Madhvacharya's followers. Udipi. So, in there, some of Madhvacharya's followers are called Tattvavadis. They are very much involved in all kinds of rituals. Actually, as it is, these Madhva followers are quite into rituals, but these people are very much into rituals and so on and so forth. So when Mahaprabhu arrived there in Udipi, then these people did not take Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very seriously. Because they saw that this man is a sannyasi, but his behavior is not like a sannyasi. He is not grave, or he is not into the rituals, or so on and so forth. He doesn't even study so much. He simply chants and dances, and he seems to be very frivolous. So they became a little negative about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had a very unique way of winning people over, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a discussion with their acharyas, and he told him to bless him and told him, why don't you give me some instructions? After all, I'm just a young sannyasi. I don't really... And you are so learned, you are such a wise man. You are such a wise man. So please, give us some instructions. So then he started to describe his tattva, and he told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that liberation is the ultimate goal of life. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted him to explain, to teach him with the philosophy. And this man instructed that liberation is the ultimate goal. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam and some other scriptures where it has been said that if liberation is offered to the devotees, devotees do not accept it. Diyamanam nagrinhanti bina matsevanam jana. Krishna himself is telling that Diyamanam, even if it is offered, cha, although, na grihanti, do not accept, bina matsevanam jana, without my service. So my devotees do not want even liberation, even offered to them, because they don't want anything besides my service. Another shloka Mahaprabhu quoted, I think this is from Krishna Karnamrita. This shloka says that mukti mukulitanjali shevate ashmin. Mukti means liberation personified. Mukti Devi. Mukti with fold, liberation with folded hands. Praise to the devotees that please allow us, please engage me in your service. Let me do something for you. So we can see that the liberation is eagerly waiting to serve the devotees. That means devotees do not surrender to liberation. On the other hand, liberation is eagerly waiting to receive the mercy. We can see that the liberation is eagerly waiting to serve the devotees. That means devotees do not surrender to liberation. On the other hand, liberation is eagerly waiting to receive the mercy of the devotees. So when Mahaprabhu quoted this shloka, then it became very clear to the Acharya and he was defeated. He realized that devotees do not want liberation. There is no need to aspire for liberation separately. Liberation has already been attained for a devotee, by a devotee. Okay, now I'll go back to this same point. There is this expression, koitava dharma, dharma prajjita koitava atho. Now dharma means what? Religion. And koitava means? Koitava means cheating or false. Now, what is this false religion? I was describing just a while ago. What is the false religion? No, false religion means the religion that is motivated by sense gratification. Some people worship Krishna. Apparently, it seems that he is a very religious person. But at the back of his mind, he prays to Krishna that please give me a lot of money, right? Please make me famous, or please give me nice children. Like the recently we were discussing in Bhagavatam class, the demigods were praying to Krishna. Demigods were praying, but through their prayers, we could see that how demigods were not pure devotees. Why was that? Why we don't consider demigods to be pure devotees? You are answering. You are saying so many. Anyway, anybody else? Please raise your hand. Okay. Why? Because they're motivated by their material desires. They worship Krishna, but it is motivated by their material desires. And what they were praying to Krishna? Oh Krishna, Vritra has driven us out of our kingdom. We lost everything. So you please come and kill Vritra. That is their prayer. Although just before that, they are glorifying Krishna with all kinds of beautiful prayers. That, oh my Supreme Lord, you are the source of all creation and by your inconceivable potency, everything is maintained. And so many wonderful prayers. But then ultimately they say that now Vritra has driven us out of our kingdom, so you please kill Vritra so that we can enjoy in our kingdom. So this is the Karmakanda. Demigods are actually the Karmakandis. A little refined Karmakandis. So this way demigods are not pure devotees. Or anybody who has any desire for enjoying this material nature are not pure devotees. So a pure devotee is a person who is not at all motivated by his sense gratification, and he does not desire anything but pleasing Krishna. So dharma, literally the word dharma means the inherent quality of a substance. In Sanskrit, the word dharma means the inherent quality of a substance. Like fire is a substance. And what are the inherent qualities of fire? Wherever there is fire, there is heat. And also there is light. Can you imagine fire without heat and light? No. If you see, if there is some so-called fire, then actually it is not fire. Like fireflies, gives out light, right? But do we call it fire? No, because it doesn't have heat. So wherever there is fire, there must be light and heat. So light and heat are the inherent qualities of fire, hence they are the dharma of fire. Or the burning ability to burn is the dharma of fire. Like another way of looking at it is, like electricity apparently doesn't show the light and heat, right? But when electricity is passed through some substance, then it is burned, right? Like thunderbolt. When the thunder falls on somebody's head, what happens? He's immediately burned. If the whole body becomes charred, black. I haven't seen, but I heard. When thunderbolt hits you, the body, because a thunderbolt is actually electricity. And electricity is subtle fire. Electricity is subtle fire. So fire has a burn ability, quality to burn. So that is the inherent quality of, or the dharma of fire. Light and heat, or the ability to burn. Now water is a substance. Now what is the inherent quality of water?
Liquid.
Yeah, liquidity. Liquidity is the inherent quality of water. Now, when the water becomes solid, it does become solid, doesn't it? Then, does it remain as water? Then you call it water? Do we call it water? No, we call it ice. Or when the water becomes evaporated, when the water evaporated, then it is steam. It is not water any longer. And as you said, the taste of water, like if you are very thirsty and somebody offers you some steam, will you get the taste of water? Or if somebody gives you a block of ice? No. Only when the ice is melted, or when the steam has become condensed, and then only it can quench your thirst. So this way every substance has certain inherent qualities. And Atma is a substance, right? Spirit soul is what? A substance. And what is the inherent quality of spirit soul?
Service.
What?
Service.
Yes, both are correct. Yeah, that is the, that's the spiritual quality. The spirit soul is a spiritual substance, right? Spiritual substance. And what is the inherent quality of the spirit soul? To love God. And that is the dharma of the spirit soul. And unless and until a spirit soul becomes engaged in this dharma, then the spirit soul is not satisfied. Can never be satisfied. The spirit souls are trying to do so many things. Do you try to do so many things? To enjoy? Huh? Did you become satisfied?
Of course you can never be satisfied
because the
soul is unlimited
desires. But what if the soul becomes engaged in service?
Unlimited service.
Well, you can get an unlimited service. You know the story of that ghost? Somebody, one ghost came and told somebody that, look, I want to serve you. Now, whatever you want, I'll get for you. And but on one condition, that you have to always keep me busy. You have to always keep me busy. So the man agreed. He said, wonderful, I'll give you enough service. So he said, now you build a palace for me. So the ghost immediately built a palace for him. Then he said, well, now you bring a lot of money for me. So the ghost immediately brought a lot of money. So the ghost was, he would desire something and the ghost would immediately bring it to him. Then he didn't have any more service to offer to the ghost. And the ghost actually told him that if you can't offer me service, then I'll break your neck. And so then the man got really worried. Now the ghost is going to come and he doesn't have any service to give him. So he said, there was a pole, long huge pole. So he said, the ghost came and said, give me some service. So he said, okay, you climb up the pole and climb down the pole. Then you climb up the pole, so this way, this is your next service. You climb up, and when you climb up on top, then you climb down to the bottom. So then the ghost got a service, an endless service. Now if you do that, right, since your tendency is to be engaged in an unlimited service, you can become engaged in such unlimited service, climbing up the pole and down the pole. But will you be happy? Will you be satisfied?
But
that's
I don't think that down climbing the pole is good
in
the world.
Then?
So many right
service. No, but in a material nature, people are engaged in so many service. Are they happy? Are they satisfied?
Yes,
that's the point. Unless and until a person begins to love God, he cannot become satisfied. And why? Because that is the inherent desire of the soul. So unless and until he becomes engaged, or unless and until he becomes situated in his inherent propensity, he cannot be satisfied. And unless he cannot be satisfied, because then he is an unnatural state. Only when he is situated in his constitutional position, or only when he is engaged in his inherent propensity, then only he becomes situated in his constitutional position. And that brings him satisfaction. The way Prabhupada told us, the Prabhupada gave us the example of fish out of water. when the fish is on the land, you may offer him all the facilities of the land. Will the fish be happy? But when the fish is put back into the water, then immediately it becomes happy. So same way, we are in a foreign place. We actually belong to the spiritual nature. Spirit soul is a spiritual substance. So we belong to the spiritual nature. But this material nature is a foreign place. So that's why in the material nature, although we are getting so many facilities, you have your houses, you have your cars, you have your money, you have your friends, and so on and so forth, but still you are not happy. Why? Because what you actually want is not available here. And what you actually want, you want Krishna. So that's why the inherent quality of, inherent propensity of a living entity is to love Krishna, and that is the dharma of a living entity. A spirit soul's dharma is to love Krishna. But in order to love Krishna, we have to get to know Krishna. And that's why our endeavor is to know Krishna through associating with the devotees, coming in contact with the spiritual master, and studying the scriptures. And then as we get to know Krishna, the more we develop our love for him. So that is the real dharma. And any other activity besides this is called Kaitava dharma, or cheating religion. So when one gives up this cheating religion and becomes situated in his original religion, dharma, then he... Although in the beginning we may desire to be engaged in some particular service, but that is due to our lack of advancement. But when a person becomes really advanced, and when he becomes really pure, then he simply depends on Krishna, what service he would like him to do, or Krishna's representative. Depends on Krishna or Krishna's representatives for being engaged in service. But if we say, well, I will only render this service and not that service, that is not sign of advancement. Mother loves her child. The mother doesn't say, I only will feed my child and I will not clean the stool of the child. No. The mother does both the service with equal love. Why? Because she loves the child. So when we love Krishna, they will like to do anything that would please Krishna. The example is when Krishna had got a headache, and Narad Muni asked Krishna how his headache could be relieved. And what did Krishna tell him? Yeah, get the dust of my devotee. And that alone can, if I put the dust on my head, then that alone can relieve me of my headache. And Narad Muni went all over the universe looking for the dust of some devotee's feet. And everyone said, how can we give dust? Narad Muni said that, please, Krishna got a terrible headache, and the medicine for that headache is dust of a devotee. So you are such a great devotee, so please give me some dust of your feet. And that person's response immediately was, how can I offer the dust of my feet to Krishna? I'll go to hell if I do that. No, please, I cannot offer that to Krishna. You go to somebody. No, please, I think so, go to somebody else. Said, I can't offer it. Now, in all 14 world, Narad Muni couldn't find a single one who would voluntarily offer his dust, offer the dust from his feet. Then Narad Muni came to Vrindavan. And the gopis saw Narad Muni, asked, oh, Narad, how are you doing? And Narad said, I'm doing fine, but Krishna is not doing very well. He got a terrible headache. So how can he be relieved of his headache? Narayan said, actually he needs some dust from his from the feet of his devotee. Now, actually I went all over 14 planetary systems but couldn't find a single one who would be voluntarily willing to give it. So Gopi said, well, I don't know whether we are devotees of Krishna, but you can take the dust of our feet. If that relieves Krishna's headache, then we don't mind giving it to Krishna. And then Narada said, but do you know, if Krishna puts the dust of your feet on his head, what will happen to you? You will go to hell for so many lifetimes and for so many kalpas. Gopi says, doesn't matter. Don't bother about that. It doesn't really matter. Krishna's headache will be relieved, and that's what matters to us. For how many kalpas we go to hell is no consideration to us. So that is the mood of a devotee. They will undergo any situation or any curse or any difficulty just in order to please Krishna. So devotees, advanced devotees, pure devotees, would accept service without any such consideration. Whether he likes it or not, that's not his lookout. He doesn't even bother about it. The way the mother doesn't care, mother doesn't bother about it, although she doesn't like. Generally she doesn't like to touch stool, but still, you know, cleaning the stool of the child, she doesn't mind. That is what love is. Any other question? Very nice question. That has been very nicely answered by the Goswamis. That shloka, what I mentioned. The Arujyaki Krichena Pada Param Padam Tatu Patanti Adha means falls down. Anadrita Yushmadam Rai. Because they have disregarded the lotus feet of Krishna. That has been explained as you see the gate of Vaikuntha is guarded by Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva has a trident in his hand. And when somebody tries to trespass into Vaikuntha, Param Padam Tata. Param Pad means supreme position. If some demon wants to take over Krishna's position, Vishnu's position in Vaikuntha, and tries to trespass into Vaikuntha Loka, they are not qualified to enter, because the qualification to enter into Vaikuntha is that one must be surrendered to Krishna. But they are not surrendered to Krishna, but still they want to enter into Vaikuntha. So Lord Shiva hurls his trident, and being hit by the trident, these souls become unconscious and fall down. And they become unconscious, like stone. At the most, they become a piece of diamond or sapphire and give out a little light and think, Aham Brahmasmi. I have become Brahma now.
What about the story who would think that...
Amrish?
Yes, where he was chased, but he was a devotee.
He was Durvasa. Durvasa was a devotee, but not a pure devotee. He knew Krishna, he knew Vishnu, he knew Vishnu's supreme position. And that's why he went to Vishnu to take shelter. He was not an impersonalist or Mayavadi. The worst kind of impersonalists are actually Mayavadi. Durvasa was a sage. He was a great asset of austerity. And he is actually an incarnation of Lord Shiva. He was born with the potency of Lord Shiva. in the case of the four Kumaras, they were interested in the personal liberation, and because they were attracted by the two lessons, they were they were able to go in Vaikuntha Palace. So it's just sufficient to be attracted by one teacher of Krishna.
Yes, they have become. I mean, one can fall in love just by very insignificant impetus. Apparently, it's a very insignificant impetus. Like we want to talk about the fragrance of Tulasi. We don't even get inspired by Krishna consciousness, smelling the most fragrant perfume that may have been offered to Krishna's lotus feet. The thing is that those fragrance reminded them of Krishna's supreme position, and that's how they became attracted to Krishna. You see, some souls are very pure, and with the slightest provocation or motivation or impetus, they become attracted to Krishna. And more advanced one is, more easily he will be attracted to Krishna. Like Rukmini, didn't even see Krishna, just heard about Krishna. And she fell in love with Krishna. Right? Whereas Duryodhana, even in spite of seeing Krishna, he saw that Krishna killed Shishupala by his disc. He knew, immediately he could see that here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not only that, he heard Krishna's pastimes from his childhood. He killed Putana when he was 3 years old, he lifted Govardhan, he killed Trinavarta, he killed Aghasur, he killed Bakasur, he killed Kamsa. Krishna killed so many big demons in his very childhood. And then he saw in front of his eyes that his big friend Shishupa was killed by his disc. And that's a sure indication that this is the disc of the Lord, Narayana. But still he would not surrender to Krishna. So, we don't have to go very far to Duryodhana. We can go look at ourselves. For so many years we have been practicing Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada has given us so many books, we read them, but still our heart is so hard that we do not develop any love for Krishna. We may think that, well, when you see Krishna face to face, then we'll develop our love. Forget it. If you did not develop your love for Krishna as it is, even in spite of seeing Krishna, you won't develop that love. There's another nice story. One old lady was collecting some wood in the forest, and then she was old, and the bundle of wood was quite heavy on her head, so it fell off her head, and she just called out, "Oh Krishna!" And Krishna immediately came there, said, "Oh, you called me? What can I do for you?" Then lady said, "Look, I dropped that bundle of log, so can you please help? Can you please put it back on my head?" So, well, in a way it's not so bad. She did not really deserve something unnecessarily from Krishna. She was just concerned about her immediate need. So that's a nice indication. But at the same time we can see that how foolish it is to just ask Krishna for such an insignificant. Like she saw Krishna, but she didn't know who this person is, what his abilities are. If she knew, then she could have told him that, "Oh Krishna, please take me back to Godhead. Right? Or make me a devotee." Because being a devotee means being in God, being back to God. Somebody, a devotee may even go to be in hell. A devotee may even be in hell, but still, he is in Vaikuntha. He is in Vrindavan. Actually, the Western countries are hell, right? The cities in the West are hellish, right? Maya is so strong, but devotees don't mind. They are preaching away Krishna consciousness with ecstasy. Even India is becoming hellish now. Calcutta is hellish. Delhi, all these big cities are hellish. Bombay, Delhi, Calcutta. The villages have little bit of sanity still left. But the cities are insane. Even Vrindavan has become insane. Go to Loi Bazaar. People say Hare Krishna. But when they say Hare Krishna to you, you know that they're not saying Hare Krishna. They're saying, give me some money, give me some money.
And after they get so insane that they are, just the other day I saw somebody killing a pig right in front of them in the street just to sell it on market.
Okay, you're getting late for your prasad. I hope they'll save some for you today. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.